As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Totally Football Show today, midweek music in the Champions League. City on song, Milan put out a tune, and Man United with the worst performance in a group since Kerry Katona. We round up the final match day, one that saw Barcelona losing and Celtic winning. Then check out the Premier League weekend, your Arsenal Brightons, your Liverpool Man Uniteds, your TV's unhealthy obsession with showing the Hammers Sunday lunchtime. All that and somehow still more in this Totally Football Show. Boom, and off we go with a brand new show. This one's coming to you from the morning of Thursday, the 14th of December. The dust settling on the last ever Champions League group stage around us as we're joined by Duncan Alexander.
Hello.
Charlie Eccleshare.
Hello.
And Raphael Honigstone.
Hello.
Hello, Rafa.
So nice to see you.
Well, it is nice to see you and you, and you listener in a sense, really. Charlie, we've got you for a good time, but not a long time.
Let's make it count.
All right, you're off to see Ange Postecoglou.
Very much so.
Right, and you're going to play a key role in this morning's press conference ahead of Friday night's clash with Forest. What question are you going to ask Ange?
It's a good question. I will...
You haven't thought?
No, I'll mull it over on the way there and have a little chat with some of my colleagues beforehand.
Right.
Can't give it away now, anyway.
Yeah, he might be listening.
Exactly.
Exactly. Alrighty. Excellent. Well, so much to look forward to. I've got one or two questions myself prepared for this show, and they regard, to begin with, the Champions League, which this week had its match day six with four places in the knockout stages still to be settled. Two Premier League sides sweating over their chances of springtime European fun. Tuesday, Man United, their run came to an end with a whimper, beaten at home by Bayern. They finished bottom of the group. It's Copenhagen who goes through alongside FC Bayern, thanks to the Danes' 1-0 win at Parken over Galatasaray, who themselves take third. Wednesday, Newcastle also finished bottom of the group, with Milan winning 2-1 at St James's, but PSG going through with Dortmund after the 1-1 draw away in Germany for the Parisians. Wild night of action across those two games. We'll come onto it very shortly. The draw for the last 16 is on Monday morning. There'll only be two English sides in it. Two. Crikey. City, who won 3-2 in Belgrade against Werner Zvezda to make it 6 wins out of 6 for Pep's side. Ooh, goals from academy graduates Micah Hamilton and Oscar Bob, and also their bright young prospect Calvin Phillips. Arsenal also finished off in some sort of style. They had a 1-1 draw away at PSV Eindhoven. Both of those two teams are already through, and Lens taking third in that group. I mention that because it means that Sevilla, who got beaten with the bollard by Lens, are out of Europe altogether, not in the Europa League. Woo! Shock faces.
Opens it up.
Certainly does. Elsewhere, midweek, what else happened? Well, Napoli claimed their place in the last 16 with a 2-0 win over Braga. Porto also made it through, beating Shakhtar Donetsk. They'll be in the knockout stages the 14th time in the last 21 seasons, as Richard Pike points out. Thank you, Richard. Oh, that was quite a game, that, wasn't it? 5-3 against Shakhtar. Oh, the other game in that group saw Antwerp, most improbably, beating Barcelona 3-2 with Spurs' very own Vincent Janssen Well, not very own anymore, but, you know.
One of their own,
yeah. He was on the score sheet. That's right. And also on Wednesday, Celtic, who hadn't won an actual Champions League game since 2017, managed to get a victory on their 16th attempt in a dead rubber at home to Feyenoord. Well done to the Hoops. Let's concentrate on Premier League's making a mess of it. First time that two English clubs have finished bottom of a group in the same season. Previously, in fact, in the history of this competition, only three English sides had ever finished in last place in a group.
Blackburn, back in the fighting each other era.
United did it, didn't they?
In that awful group, and there's about three goals in the entire thing. Mm. And then Man City.
Yeah. Who'd have thought? Under Roberto Mancini.
Yeah.
Mm. Doing a run as Roberto Mancini.
Yeah. But it is, I mean, I was thinking this week, what else could the Premier League do in the soon-to-be-departed Champions League group that they hadn't done before? And lo and behold, two teams finishing bottom.
Well, Newcastle at least made a brave stab at it. And for a good half hour or so, I think, on Wednesday, we're going through in second place.
Mm. It's quite weird, their approach, I thought, because they really went for it towards the end. I mean, it was great to watch because it was two teams just desperate to win, which you don't often see. But they could have just taken that draw and taken the Europa League. I was slightly surprised that they were playing as if they were going out with a draw.
Yeah.
Which they weren't. They could have sat back, taken the point, gone through to the Europa League.
But with a win.
But a win would have got them Champions League, sure. Yeah. But I mean, so I can see why they wanted to win.
Yeah.
But they were playing as if it was all or nothing, which it wasn't.
Oh. But maybe their medical staff were going, please, no Europa League, please.
I do slightly wonder that. Like, there are certainly some clubs, I wouldn't put Newcastle in that bracket, but there are some clubs whose supporters anyway would say, I'd probably go out of Europe altogether rather than have a playoff for the Europa League knockout.
I can imagine that with PSG not looking in any way dominant at Signal Iduna Park, although actually, now I say that, how many chances did they have?
18, I think.
18 shots. They but they were PSGing dominant. It up, basically. They went behind. They did pull one back through the wonderful Warren Zaïre-Emery. But the draw meant that a victory for Newcastle, and they had their chances too. A goal line clearance from Tomori, the one off the crossbar on that.
They did, but like the goal they conceded comes from Shah basically bombing forward, completely vacating his position, and then they get countered on and concede. So they might be thinking now, oh, could we have, yes, gone for the win, but maybe not completely just chucked everything at the win.
You rarely see a centre-half playing a 1-2.
Yeah.
There it was.
Still, when they were 1-0 up especially, maybe they could have reined it in a little bit after that thunder strike from Joe Ellington. I'm comparing this to their recent performances, though, when they looked dead on their feet against Everton and Spurs, it was a remarkably lively showing that they put in.
Yeah, I mean, and they've still got so many games coming up because they're still in the League Cup as well. Hmm. So there's no respite for them. At least, I guess, they're getting a few players back. But no, it was a hugely entertaining game just because of that very unusual game state where both teams seemed absolutely, you know, just hell-bent on getting a goal one way or the other.
Hmm. What a moment at the end as well when Newcastle, desperate for an equaliser at that point, threw their goalkeeper up. Martin Dubravka racing upfield to try and take advantage of a corner. The corner failed to go anywhere near him. Milan get the ball. All of a sudden, there's an empty net. Yeah. It was like an ice hockey game.
Yeah, but Theo Hernandez, unfortunately, missed a shot.
It was a really bad shot.
It was a really weird effort.
It was it reminded me of, you know, when fans at half-time can try and win a car by hitting the crossbar. It was one of those.
It wouldn't have made any difference, an extra goal for Milan, because with PSG drawing away in Dortmund, there was no way that Milan could take second spot. A draw in Dortmund would have been enough had Newcastle got the win, but, you know, they didn't.
I think Newcastle can at least go out with, you know, their heads held high. It was a brave first foray back into the Champions League, and I think they'll all hope that they can get back there, and I think maybe some other English clubs this week can't say that.
Although United gave us some of the most entertaining moments we've seen.
It was entertaining.
Credit to TNT Sports for on Twitter just doing it. Here are all the goals Manchester United conceded in the group stage.
Wow, how long did that take?
It took a while. But
15,
it,
15. It's as many as Chelsea let in the Premier League in 2004-05.
But it was just a great bit of content.
Mm.
I think the worrying thing about Newcastle is that they're so far away from their previous version last year, where they were all about super tight defending, strong cohesion, teams found it so hard to get behind them. And now, because the energy isn't quite there, because there's no substitutions, injuries, they are bit of a soft touch. And games are much more open and entertaining as a result. I mean, the game we both saw at White Hart Lane was great. But I asked Eddie Howe after the game, you know, how concerned was he that Newcastle are not really the Newcastle that we've come to respect last season. And he said, well, it's just a case of the moment and injuries, etc. Mm. He didn't want to think that there's something fundamentally wrong, but I'm worried a little bit about
they did also benefit from not being in Europe last season and just having that one game a week routine. So maybe in the second half of the season, that coupled with players coming back, they can get back to that.
All clubs will point to injuries and misfortunes, but there has been a particularly difficult set of circumstances for Eddie Howe and Newcastle as they dealt with this first Champions League campaign. Do you think it's that, or do you think that in some way tactically they got a bit drunk on...
Well, they got into the Champions League too early, I'd say. Like, they didn't plan to be in it this season. Their squad isn't ready for it. I don't think possibly Eddie Howe was ready for it. They obviously had that big win against a dishevelled PSG, but that was the... They looked a bit naive in other games. You know, people point to the penalty away at PSG, but I mean, again, how many chances did Paris create that night?
XG of five almost.
Yeah. Mm. Plus their lack of recent European pedigree worked against them for the draw. They were in the bottom seed and they got a particularly bad group. So they are mitigating circumstances.
Okay, mitigating circumstances for Man United, who were in a group with Copenhagen, Galatasaray and FC Bayern Munich.
So.
Less so.
Although I think the group in a way was trickier than it looked. Because I think Copenhagen have qualified. They're a decent side. Mm. And so Galatasaray with all the talent that they have. So it looked, I think, easier than it was ultimately. And you saw Bayern struggle in quite a few of those games. So I understand Ten Hag saying that perhaps it isn't a disgrace that it looks like to finish bottom. But of course, when you spend as much money as they have, and have an aspiration to go back to where Man United used to be at the very peak of European football, at least for a few good years, then, it's hugely demoralising.
We'll talk more about Man United very shortly and their visit to Anfield this weekend. Newcastle, meanwhile, will have Fulham on Saturday, which could be interesting because Fulham are in some form at the moment, averaging 4 goals a game over the last 4 matches, and Kieran Trippier will be suspended for that match. Again, at St. James's. Rafa, from the group of death, as it was dubbed, it is Dortmund and PSG who go through. Dortmund's through as winners and PSG as runners-up. What did you make of PSG and their prospects?
Hard to get a real handle on them because going forward, they're actually quite exciting. There's a lot of pace, a lot of movement. They created lots of chances in many games. You mentioned Newcastle last night. They could have easily scored 3 or 4 goals. But there is still that lack of balance. They still concede lots of chances and it doesn't strike you as the best kind of prospect to go deep in the European Cup competition where things tend to tighten up towards the latter stages and you need to be better in terms of having a balance. So I don't know, I'm not convinced that this new PSG and their new identity, etc., is really cut out to have very different results.
Mm. And Dortmund, how much trouble are they going to give?
I'm not sure because Dortmund, there's two Dortmunds. One Dortmund in domestic competition who are very flaky, continue to be very unpredictable and have had some awful games in the Bundesliga and in the Cup where they got knocked out. The Dortmund in the Champions League have ridden their luck occasionally. Certainly they did last night, but also have put all their best performances when the floodlights were on. So having won the group and maybe getting a little bit lucky in the last 16 round draw, you could see them getting into the quarterfinal. That's probably the extent of their capability. There's a lot of talk in Dortmund that they could do what Dortmund did in 2013 when they last made it to Wembley, which is to surprise everyone and go on this amazing run. Back then they also won a group of death ahead of Real Madrid, Ajax, and the aforementioned Mancini, Man City. The difference being that was at the tail end of Jurgen Klopp's golden era, a team that had already won big things and was getting into the groove when it came to European football, I think this Dortmund team are not at the same level.
Okay, they made it to the final in 2013 when it was last at Wembley. The team that beat them there, of course, are FC Bayern, who may have ambitions of a trip to Niesen again this coming May or early June or whenever it is.
The road to Niesen. Yeah.
Is it Niesen or Wembley?
It's kind of Niesen, isn't it? You certainly pass through.
Close to Niesen.
I think it's, I mean, it's, let's not
close
quibble
to
over,
IKEA.
You know, metropolitan boundaries. But speaking of FC Bayern, they're up next as we discuss their performance and, you know, the fallout thereof Tuesday against Man United.
Hi, I'm Ian Irving, host of Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. Twice a week, I'm joined by Andy Mitten, Carl Anker and Laurie Whitwell as we bring you the very best insight from inside Old Trafford. You'll get all you need to know on transfers, tactical analysis, dare I say takeovers, and much, much more as we follow United home and away. You're not getting this anywhere else. So search for Talk of the Devils and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Einfüßig von Kingsley Coman. Oh, stark von Kane, jetzt Coman! Und da ist das Treffer! 70. Minute, 0-1.
Tuesday, FC Bayern already group winners, ending their group stage campaign with a 1-0 at Old Trafford. Kingsley Coman scoring the only goal of the game with a wonderful assist from Harry Kane. He's now got as many assists, Duncan.
At Old Trafford this season as Bruno Fernandes.
That can't be true.
I mean, I'm sure some Man United fans hope for that in the summer, but as it's transpired, maybe not.
Finally opened his assist account.
Bayern, Rafa, bouncing back from that unpleasantness at the weekend.
Yeah, that 5-1 defeat away to Frankfurt on Saturday, I think, didn't play into United's hands. Bayern and that dead rubber from their perspective, but a bit of extra motivation to show a different face, to banish all that talk about this team falling apart and not being good enough. And you could see it. I mean, they weren't perhaps at 100% in terms of pushing and trying to score lots of goals. But defensively, they were very, very disciplined. They tried to work together as a team. There's a lot of commitment, a lot of tackles, a lot of running. And I think ultimately the better football team edged through in what was a game with very few clear-cut chances. I think both teams, even Ten Hag, who had to win, played more as if he didn't want to lose heavily.
Right. Well, Charlie was suggesting almost that Newcastle wanted to win too much. Did it feel almost as if United didn't want it enough in classic football?
I mean, the idea was to, I think, wait for Bayern to make a mistake and then play on the break. That's how they were set up. But that mistake never happened and the breaks never happened. And then when United had a bit more possession and pushed a bit more in the second half, they never really looked like scoring. And it's just that one measly shot on target from,
from Luke Shaw from
quite a distance straight at Manuel
Neuer. In the 23rd minute.
So. And then nothing in the second half when they really
had to go for
it. I mean,
they had nothing off the bench, did they?
Did they bring off the bench, Rafa?
Pelistri, Mejbri and Mainu.
Indeed. All right.
A win. And Johnny Evans.
Yeah.
And Johnny Evans.
A win, as it turned out, wouldn't have helped United qualify as the group's other game needed to finish in a draw for them to make second spot. It didn't. Copenhagen with a 1-0 win over Galatasaray. It would at least, though, have given United the fig leaf of Europa League. And there are so many issues. They need to improve at passing, shooting, etc. But, I mean, we can't ignore Onana's role in this. For all the problems that Ten Hag and the team have had, I can't recall
seeing a team's European campaign quite so thoroughly undone by one individual.
Well,
it's time and time again. The first game against Galatasaray, United were absolutely steaming.
First game was Bayern.
He made a
penalty. Sorry, the first game against Bayern, United looked great for the opening 20, and then until he threw in one of his, and then against Galatasaray, Copenhagen.
I mean, he did make that last minute penalty save as well. So
yeah, that's true.
And it's very curious this season in the sense that last year he had the best goals prevented rate in the Champions League.
Yeah.
This season, not at all. But he's got.
What's
he's
less curious well is the fact that the man who's replaced him at Inter, Sommer, is again racking up clean sheets.
I know
City
what you did, Jan
Sommer.
Yeah. And then United's, you know, the golden glove holder from last season in the Premier League, it still doesn't have a
kicking
glove.
His heels. I mean, Andre Onana, I said in this very room in our pre-season preview that he'd be transformative for United. And I was right. I was absolutely right. He has been. He's been revelatory.
Explain why the events of this midweek, Rafa, were a major blow to England's hopes of securing a fifth Champions League spot in next season's new format.
Because they need all the points they can get to finish as one of the two top federations who will get an extra place.
And these everyone, are points that you pick up for victories in the Champions League and Europa League and Conference League.
Yeah, points. Yeah, points and then extra points for progressing later on in the knockouts. And there was a lot of confidence going into this. That because of the historic performances of these English teams, it was sort of kind of a given that they would do it. Now they've fallen behind, where are they
Italy
in the position?
Italy and Germany.
Are they still third?
Yeah, fourth, I think.
Only fourth.
I think they're still just about third. But obviously, we were recording this before the Europa and Conference games.
Anyway, they've fallen behind.
Right.
And Italy have seven teams left.
And Germany are first. So it might not be enough to finish fifth after all.
Yeah. But it does mean that you might see United and Spurs and Newcastle fans cheering on City and Liverpool and Villa and West Ham. I mean, probably, I think if City won the Champions League again, Liverpool won the Europa League, probably be enough. Opta have got a predictive model around it, and after the last set of games, it was an 80% chance that the Premier League would be one of the federations getting an extra place. So I still believe.
In the magic of coefficients. It's a weird dynamic. Cause, I mean, it's kind of a double whammy. If you're a supporter of Tottenham or something like that, not only are United and Newcastle out and you'd think they'll now be better in the league with freer game weeks, but also it means this could contribute to there being one less space.
Yeah.
So,
I'm quite troubled by the notion that top four is no longer a target for somebody who's not quite there for the title, but wants to have a prestigious season. Still, how exactly will the new format take shape?
Well,
so there's eight games against eight different
opponents, one big group,
but they're seeded
in
four different sections, and then you will play two games against each section at random.
Okay,
so eight different.
Not complete random. They're not going to ring you up in the morning and go, "You've got to get to Copenhagen."
That would be brilliant.
That is true.
That would actually be good.
That would be amazing.
Not quite.
And you can't use your mobile phone or anything to get there to get to Galatasaray.
The first eight teams qualify directly for knockout.
Okay.
The next 16 teams play a playoff to get into the knockout, and all the others are gone.
So the phrase sneaking into the top eight will become a thing from next season.
Absolutely.
I'm looking forward to that.
One interesting feature of all of this.
Oh, there is one?
There is one. In order to keep it competitive, even though you know pretty early on probably whether you're going to make the top 24 and will be still with a shot of qualifying, is that there will be a seeded system, not just for the knockout draw that follows, but throughout the tournament. So if you finish first and second, they will put you at different parts of the draw, as in tennis.
Ah.
And that way, in theory, we should have bigger games as we progress, which some will say takes away the romance of the, you know, the obscure team that somehow falls through the cracks and ends up in a semi-final. At the same time, I think it's going to be pretty cool for the entertainment and quality.
The blockbuster value. Of the
I think it's going to be fun for the first couple of years anyway, because it's just a bit different. I think 20 years of the current format felt a little bit tired.
One breath of fresh air are Copenhagen,
who are into the last 16 for, I think, the first time in 12 years with that 1-0 win against Galatasaray. The Danes, you know, for fans of such things, have a budget of about the 20th of that of Man United's. All right, Man United, next up, we'll be travelling to Anfield. We'll be looking at that and the rest of the Premier League weekend next.
All right, listeners, Tony Evans here, host of Walk On, your dedicated Liverpool podcast from The Athletic. Myself, James Pearce and Simon Hughes will be here every week on Wednesday this season as we bring you all the news and views that you could possibly ever want from the club. And James brings you At The Match Pod after every Premier League game, and it's really good, you know. Listen for free wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to follow and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
Premier League Match Day 17 starts on Friday evening. Forest hosting Spurs. Are you going to be there, Charlie?
I'm not, actually. Okay. No, I can't make this one.
Sorry I asked. Saturday, there's only one game on TV. It's not Bournemouth-Luton, nor is it Chelsea-Sheffield United. Is it perhaps Man City against Crystal Palace? No. And neither is it Newcastle facing Fulham. No, it's Burnley-Everton. Because Sean Dyche, Turf Moor.
Tough place to go.
I mean, it'll be an emotional return.
It will.
Sunday, similarly intriguing pick by the TV Supremos. Out of the 3 2 o'clock games, there's Arsenal, Brighton, Brentford, Aston Villa and West Ham Wolves. Which have they gone for?
West Ham Wolves.
That's correct. In the last month, games in the Sunday 2 p.m. slot to be broadcast live on Sky Sports have been West Ham Palace, West Ham Forest, and now West Ham Wolves.
There's your Olympic legacy.
Indeed.
Isn't this something that could change? Because as it stands, those games are still viewed in the same way as the 3 p.m. blackout games are.
Because that's part of the new
contract. That's going to change. And that will be good. So that suddenly these Sunday 2 p.m.s, rather than just having West Ham televised, all of them will be.
The season after next. Anyway, later on Sunday is the big one, Liverpool-Man United. What happened last time Man United visited Anfield? This.
It's a long time since I've been as confident about a Liverpool win against United. This is a difficult place for United to come.
Oh, it's a Super Bowl. Gakpo is onto it. It's Cody Gakpo!
Reach Harvey Elliott here. In by Darwin Nunez.
You can have setbacks, but what can't happen is that you don't stick together.
And Gakpo! They're carving Manchester United apart here.
In that second half today, they were unprofessional.
And it falls for Salah!
That Manchester United group of players have been eaten alive in that second half.
Lifted in by Henderson. It's Firmino Salah. That is the cherry on the icing on the cake.
It's madness.
It's cool, absolutely cool. Fantastic night for all our people.
There you go. That was Liverpool 7, Man United 0 last March. 9 months later, Liverpool are leading the league and Man United are more or less in the same old mess, maybe worse, would you say?
Yeah. But that sort of period is sort of summarises Ten Hag's United up. They did go on a good run, largely beating teams you'd expect them to beat, and then they had a tough away game and it came crashing down. And I was on a few weeks ago and got a bit of half-hearted flack after they beat Everton for kind of questioning how significant their run of 5 wins from 6 was, because as soon as they play someone good away from home, they lose.
All right.
Basically. I mean, it is staggering. So the teams that came in the top 9 last season, other than United... United played 8 games.
Right.
How many points did they get from those 8 games?
No, none, is it?
1 point.
1 point.
And that 1 point came against a Spurs team who just lost 6-1 at Newcastle and were on their 3rd manager in 4 weeks.
Right.
This season, those same teams, they've played 3 away from home. How many points?
Is it none?
It's none.
None, yeah.
That's 1 point from 11 games. Like, that is staggeringly poor over a decent sample size.
Charlie, how ugly do you think this is going to get? Because United didn't just lose a match midweek. They also lost Harry Maguire and Luke Shaw. And, ooh, Bruno Fernandes, who admittedly didn't cover himself in glory in the 7-0 last March, is also out suspended.
Yeah. I think they'll lose comfortably. Mm. I saw somewhere they haven't scored at Anfield. They haven't scored at Anfield since 2018 what was Mourinho's last game.
And these games used to be so tight. Like it was, you know, back in the Ferguson era, even when Liverpool were struggling, there was always, they weren't particularly good games, but they would always be pretty close. And then, you know, recently a lot of games between the big six have become a little bit basketball-y and back to, but I mean, that 7-0 last season, you know, Liverpool were in a bad way at that point.
And yeah, even the one before that, they lost 4-0 during Ralf Rangnick's tenure.
Yeah. I think Ten Hag is going to try and use the Bayern blueprint and be ultra compact and have three holding midfielders, at least two very defensive ones, and not expose the back four. A pretty depleted back four, I should say. And Liverpool sometimes still find it hard to break down teams that sit very deep. We saw that against Luton, for example. So it's not going to be, I think, that easy until
the first
that first goal.
If United get a lead, they might better, you know, batten down the hatches. But if Liverpool score first and early, then uh-oh. And it's obviously the new stand is partially open as well. Oh. Liverpool, so there'll be nearly 57,000 fans roaring them on.
More fans able to suck the ball in.
Yeah, from both ends.
Yeah. That might cancel itself out.
Oh, yeah, just bobbing around the
the halfway line.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw somewhere suggested, and this is just a theory, but I thought it was interesting. Do you remember when United played Liverpool in what would have been Ten Hag's third game? And United were coming into it off the back of two defeats. And so Ten Hag went a bit more pragmatic and just said, OK, let's try and get a result, which they did. But it's been suggested that that kind of set a blueprint for, rather than kind of imposing a style of play, they've just tried to be a bit more kind of reactive and go from week to week. And I think there might be something in that, because they have just kind of looked a bit lacking an identity throughout. And when you hear managers, this has been a lot in the news recently because of Postecoglou being wedded to a way of playing, and people might think, well, come on, you've got to compromise. But there is a balance, because if you compromise too much, you're just left with kind of what Ten Hag's United are a bit. I just don't really know what they are, what they're trying to be. They're just a bit meh, and it can work against the lesser teams, in inverted commas, in the Premier League. But as soon as they go away against someone good, it all unravels.
But that's why it's so disappointing, because we saw some signs of improvement last year. They had better results. There was beginning to emerge, I think, an idea of what Ten Hag wanted to do. And then what we thought was, okay, second season, more investment. He's going to shape the team around his ideas. You know, he's influenced by Ajax. He was at Bayern when Guardiola was there. We thought this is going to be sort of the United that will emerge. But what he's done is, I think, in kind of desperation rather than by design, has gone back to being very pragmatic and trying to nick games on the break, because he doesn't trust his team to be more expensive at this point.
And last season, of course, what was the catalyst for that run was getting rid of a ill-tempered Portuguese star. This time, Bruno Fernandes is out suspended. What does that actually mean in practical terms to Man United's options for this game?
I don't know.
Is it massive?
Well, I think it is significant, yeah. I mean, for all that he irritates people, he is very good and he's very important to how they play. But as Duncan says, they might just, you know, go more defensive, bring in another defensive midfielder in place of him. I mean, they might have some of those players missing from midweek back. I mean, Rashford was out ill, wasn't he? So
ill, but he hasn't featured either after, you know, friction.
I mean, you look at the signings, to Raf's point about the second season, you know, Nana, we talked about. Hoyland's done okay in the Champions League but hasn't scored yet in the Premier League. Mason Mount barely done anything. Amrabat came in and doesn't
Sancho.
Look...
Sancho was already there.
But last summer signings as well, when you look at some of those, you know, Antony... I mean, that is a huge amount of money on somebody who's not very good. Casemiro, who was really good in parts last season, but, you know, hasn't been able to play the season. And that always felt a bit risky given the age he was at when they signed him.
The conversational black hole, the tractor beam of Man United misery sucking us in once again. Liverpool, top of the league. Mo Salah ready to go. Klopp, they'll be really looking forward to this game, Raf.
I don't think you ever really look forward to that kind of game.
No?
Even if you're big favourites for the team, because then the possibility of failure and what it means becomes sort of more daunting. But yeah, I think Liverpool at the moment are happy to just go and outscore anyone. Whether that is the most promising strategy to win a big title, I'm not so sure. I'd like to see a bit more balance in the team. And I think the fact that they still haven't fully solved the holding midfield situation, Jurgen Klopp talking up Mataro Endo, but I still think he's not quite there yet. McAllister isn't a natural defensive midfielder. He's more of a number eight. And at times you see that Liverpool can't quite protect their back four as well as they want to. And when the guys up front are a little bit less on it when it comes to gegenpressing, which has been the case on some occasions, then they concede goals, and too many goals, I think, for Jürgen's liking.
Still, they're top of the league, and they're not playing early this weekend, so there's that. Put a smile on Jürgen's face.
Do you think that's funny?
Liverpool are trying to do something very unusual, almost unprecedented in Premier League history.
I'm quite unsettled by this.
Yeah, it was quite scary.
Yeah.
I mean, it's disrespectful.
Liverpool are trying to do something almost unprecedented, and that is win the Premier League playing Thursday night European football. Mm. Incredibly rare that happens. I think, and this is kind of off the top of my head, so people can correct me if it's wrong, it's happened once before. And that was in 2011-12 when Man City dropped out of the Champions League, went into the Europa League, played a couple of rounds there, and went on to still win the Premier League. So and obviously part of that, the reason that is because the best teams aren't in the Europa League. But it is also, it has tended to be a disadvantage for teams. So it'll be interesting to see how Liverpool manage that in the second half of the season.
All right.
Once they can't rotate quite so much, probably.
For now, they have that 1 point lead over Arsenal, who'll be hosting Brighton this weekend. Villa are close behind, 2 points off the top. They'll be visiting Brentford. City, who are now 4 points back, are hosting Crystal Palace. Mentioned the European champions making it 6 out of 6 midweek. No Erling Haaland in that game away at Zvezda Zvezda. And still in doubt for this weekend, although Pep says that he should be fit for the Club World Cup, which they'll be jetting off to as soon as they've finished their business with Crystal Palace. Palace, actually, who've given City a scare or two. In fact, their recent record at the Etihad, in the last 5 visits, they've lost 2, drawn 1, and also won 2.
And they were 2-0 up last season, weren't they, in the game they lost?
It ended 4-2 for City, but
Andros
still a scare. That counts as a scare.
That Andros Townsend goal there,
yes.
one of the all-time greats.
It's truly had to be dealt with, and was by Stones. Andros Townsend! A flash of brilliance!
All right, well, it'll be interesting to see how they get on in that before, as I say, heading off to Saudi Arabia for that business there. Arsenal...
I mean, Man City... Sorry, just something on Man City. I saw this, that they don't play a team that's currently in the top half of the Premier League until March. So they are set fair. Given how efficient City normally are at putting away teams that they should put away, I do think they're... sort of distance from the top is maybe a little misleading, because I feel like they are, one of those mad runs that they go on is brewing.
How many games will they be behind when they come back from the Club World Cup?
I don't know how many they miss.
It's just one, isn't it?
Yeah. They miss Brentford at home. And that's the only one, which I guess for them is annoying. It means Tony will be back when they play it, but then maybe Haaland will be back.
Maybe Tony won't be at Brentford when they play that game. I'm not sure when it's rescheduled for. Arsenal, meantime, who are a point off the top, as we mentioned, host Brighton, who have actually won on their last 3 visits to the Emirates in all competitions, including a terrific result last May when they beat Arsenal 3-0. Arsenal haven't lost at the Emirates since then. The Seagulls, as we've all spotted, are not in the greatest of form themselves. They do have a key Thursday night game against Marseille. Is that home or away? Is that Velodrome?
Home,
at the Amex.
There is a Velodrome in Brighton, Preston Park, but it's less impressive.
It's not there. Okay. But that's a match they have to win to top the group. Anyway, yeah. Any thoughts on Arsenal-Brighton?
Well, yeah, it is an interesting one, because Brighton have done really well there. And even before then, they've got some wins before that current run of 3. And that one in May where they won 3-0, Brighton was superb. I mean, Brighton have this weird... I think every game in the Premier League this season, they've both scored and conceded. Which is extraordinary. And Arsenal very rarely keep clean sheets at home in the league anyway. So you'd expect goals in it. I mean, Arsenal really need to win that to bounce back after losing to Villa and keep the pressure on Liverpool. I think that will be a very good game to watch.
Okay. Villa themselves will be at Brentford Sunday at 2 o'clock. Again, not on telly, as that Arsenal one, for all that you might want to watch it, Charlie, no. But anyway, Villa at Brentford. They also are in Thursday night action. They've got Conference League. They're away in Bosnia against Zrinjski.
Doing it for the coefficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, brave
point
boys.
To progress. Very good. What else is happening this weekend? We'll talk about that next.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
This is The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Oh, it's December 14th, everybody. Happy Fabio Capello appointed England Manager Day to those who celebrate. You remember those brave days 16 years ago when the super successful, super disciplinarian Capello came in to whip the,
classic.
Let's be frank, spoiled Three Lions industry.
Yeah.
They were spoiled.
They were.
What did you think when you heard the news, Duncan? What dreams filled your young heart?
Well, it was very much that era when England just flitted between manager types. So at that point, it was deemed that we needed a harsh disciplinarian. And, you know, who better than Big Fab to come in with his index?
And it worked for the qualifying stages.
Yeah, they
smashed it. And how?
Yeah. Looked good against Platinum Stars in the build-up to the World Cup, but less so in the actual World Cup.
People say we never saw the index ratings for his players.
We didn't. We did see them take on Algeria in possibly the worst England performance ever in the World Cup.
Nice to hear your own fans booing you.
Yeah. Still, is it home or own? Is it home, he says? It's one of the great mysteries of our time. It's very weird. Because it's quite a weird thing to say, nice to see your home fans booing you, which I think is what he says, but it's quite jarring.
Well, we know what he meant.
We know what he meant, yeah. But
that was also the game which saw the owl. So untroubled was the Algerian goal that... I'm pretty sure some
that
form of
does
avian,
ring a bell now you say it.
Avian visitor settled on the crossbar and observed the distant proceedings.
And a Twitter account was probably set up from
it. It was a real
crossbar
owler. Anyway, James, you were saying, was this the worst England performance ever at World Cup?
Yeah.
Two games
I think it's up there.
Okay.
But I would propose that maybe England's win over Ecuador in 2006.
Yeah, that was grim.
That was bad.
Even worse.
Was
the only game I've ever seen live in a stadium where I fell asleep.
Well, really? I mean, so did some of the players. Wasn't that the game where Paul Robinson hit the Jumbotron with a kick? So, again,
another bit of football heritage.
And Beckham threw up on the pitch, which I think was the fitting description of what was being shown.
But I mean, Rafa, you could have rubbed it in our face even more. Two games after this Algeria game was the Germany 4-1 defeat, which was also pretty ropey.
VAR.
Goal line technology, anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Frankie Lamps, just slightly over the line.
But England weren't that bad In the first half.
First half.
Second half, yes, things fell apart.
Second half, things unraveled.
It was strange seeing Mesut Ozil outpace someone, Gareth Barry, in that case.
Charges past him.
Mm. Producer Charlie just intervening there, actually, to say that no owl settled on the crossbar. It was actually a pigeon. Oh. So
I have seen an owl, though, in some game. I'm sorry, on the bar.
On
he
a
didn't
bar?
Just dream this.
Oh, yeah?
This happened in a game, but okay. I don't know which one.
All right. Pigeon, anyway.
Undertaking a former footballing coup.
Very nice, Duncan. Shall we return to the other delights that await us in Matchday 17 of the Premier League, which begins actually on Friday night? Nottingham Forest will be hosting Spurs. Forest, who are uncomfortably close to the bottom three. I would suggest they're only 5 points now above 18th place Luton. Spurs, up at the other end, lying 3 points off the top four, which is a kind of legacy nomenclature that I cling to. Should we be discussing top fives? I don't know. But the Totally Football Show, as we've mentioned, is sponsored by Google Pixel. And on Sunday, Charlie, you were at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium for Spurs thrashing of Newcastle. Let's just have a little report from you, a little something enabled by Google Pixel that we're calling Beyond the Frame.
Everything you're about to hear has been recorded using Google Pixel's Audio Magic Eraser tool. That means that instead of our journalists' audio being drowned out by the crowd, the audio sounds just the way the journalists you're about to hear wants you to. You'll hear them loud and clear thanks to Audio Magic Eraser removing distracting sounds in Beyond the Frame.
Requires Google Photos app. May not work on all images or all audio elements.
Something I spotted today quite early on, there was a lot of chatter before the game as to whether it was going to be Son on the left or Richarlison on the left and who'd be through the middle. In the end, Spurs went with Son on the left and Richarlison in the middle, and it really paid off. But what was interesting early on, set the tone for the game, was how high Son was playing. He was nominally as a left winger, but he was often actually ahead of Richarlison, who was dropping in. And it reminded me a bit of the days where Kane would do that role and Son would be playing on the left, but would almost be playing as a striker. So right from the start, Son was right high up against Kieran Trippier, trying to push him back. We then saw Son getting the two assists. And I think early on, he just really spooked Trippier with that positioning. You could see the Newcastle defenders constantly having to keep an eye on him. So it really sets a template, you think, for Postecoglou as a way to use Son in that kind of inside forward role. And it paid off. And ultimately a 4-1 win for Tottenham.
Beyond the Frame with Google Pixel.
Thank you, Charlie. Forest Spurs this weekend. History. Bit of history to this one.
Mm.
You're thinking 1991 FA Cup final rematch. Clough against Venables. Gazza doing his knee with that tackle. Yeah. I'm also thinking about...
Yellow card for me, yeah.
Yeah, the fixture in far away 2022. When do you recall...
Oh, disgusting.
Spurs are 2-0
up. Absolutely disgusting.
And Richarlison decides it's time to juggle the ball on the sideline and the Forest players exact their revenge.
You get for showboating at this level. Maybe it's not right, but
it does wind people up. It's not right. You can't just go and boot people. You can't do that. But what's he doing?
Wasn't it Brennan Johnson?
It was.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, that was such a ridiculous furore. Like,
yeah, that was a great furore.
Which bit was ridiculous?
Well, the proper football men emerging from hedges immediately saying that this is...
But what was good about it as well was the narrative was going like, yeah, well, Richarlison got his comeuppance, he got kicked. It was kind of like, he did exactly what he wanted.
Yeah.
He was doing it to wind people
and
up
also,
and he served that purpose.
You mentioned Gazza.
Yes.
Like, if there's videos of someone like Gazza doing that in the 90s or 80s, everyone's like, look, the football's better than that. When someone does it now, it's like, it's disgusting. Mm. But the game's gone. Like, just some consistency, please.
All right.
Around showboating.
Or common sense.
Yeah.
Richarlison and Brennan Johnson, as you mentioned, should both be involved in this fixture on Friday night. Brennan Johnson now turning out for the other side. Has it gone under the radar that he's been really good for Spurs recently?
He has been good. He's an interesting player. I mean, he seems very smart and takes up really good positions and... yeah, he's getting chances and things like that. I think if he can add a more clinical edge to his game, hit the woodwork twice against Newcastle, it feels like it could click for him. It hasn't quite yet, just the one goal. But no, he looks like he'll understand the system well, and he is a threat. But yeah, once some of these start going in, I think that'll make a big difference to his confidence.
Okay, Spurs may need that because, of course, at the moment they're very reliant on the goals of Sun Heung-min, 10 in his last 13, and he will be off to the Asian Cup in January for could be up to a month.
Yeah, depending on how they do, which you'd think would be pretty well, unfortunately, for Spurs.
When he gave Kieran Trippier such a hard time on Sunday, I was really hoping for some involvement of another Newcastle player to come up with the Sonny and Cher headline, but it just didn't. It just never happened.
That has happened before. They both scored in a game in April 2022. So, yeah, people were able to do that then.
Steve Cooper still in charge of Forest. Long may that continue, say many Forest fans. They have had back-to-back home defeats. We'll see how this one goes Friday evening. Just a point behind Forest coming into this round of matches are Everton, a team who themselves have three straight victories and, perhaps more importantly, a fire of righteous indignation burning in their bellies. Also, a team that has a 5:30 tea time prime time slot on telly against Burnley for Sean Dyche's return to Turf Moor.
Looking forward to this.
Are you?
Yeah, it's going to remind me of the Nicolas Cage vehicle Face-Off.
Face-Off.
Two things you used to think you knew swapped around.
Right. You know. So you're saying that Burnley are now...
John Travolta. Yeah. And...
But Burnley have adopted almost Evertonian entertaining
style. More sort of established Premier League style, should we say. Uh-huh. And Everton are very much, you know, going from the Dyche playbook.
There's not much that's looking established in Premier League about Burnley, although they have had a slight uptick in fortune today.
They look all right.
Okay.
If it's...
yeah.
If it's really football's version of Face-Off, it'll feature a lot of pigeons, of course.
Were there a lot of pigeons?
Yeah, John Woo, every John Woo film
is of course.
Famous pigeon shootout.
Very good.
And I think we should pay tribute to what Dyche has done.
Yes.
You know, Everton have goals per 100 set pieces. They lead the Premier League this season. They're incredibly fit. I think people don't praise Dyche enough for... People know what he's going to do to a team, but he does, he'll do it.
But they'd be 10th without that points deduction.
Mm. Indeed. And I think what people thought he was going to do to Everton is not actually what seems to be happening. They seem to be a more expansive, creative team than we're used to seeing from him. Would you say that's fair?
I think they're still playing fairly direct, but they are doing it well. And, you know, he's concentrated a lot on fitness and, you know, actually keeping Calvert-Lewin fit and effective that's almost a managerial miracle anyway. So, and it is very easy. It's quite handy they got deducted 10 points because it's quite an easy number to add on to the total.
Very much
so. 9 would have been a bit annoying.
Indeed. Everton won't have Jared Branthwaite. He's suspended.
That is a loss.
And also Idrissa Gueye is also out. So that may play a part in the outcome of that game. We'll find out.
I mean, we don't know, haven't looked at the weather report, but obviously Dyche in the snow at Turf Moor is one of the great images of Premier League era.
So. Shirt sleeves, do you think?
Yeah, it was in his shirt sleeves.
Mm. Bottom of the table are Sheffield United, who will be visiting Chelsea, who are now 12th. Luton, who are also in the bottom three now, are at Bournemouth for what is the first ever Premier League meeting between these two clubs. That's Saturday at 3 o'clock. You can't watch it.
I mean, Chelsea they referencing Everton's points deduction again, taking that into account. Five teams have picked up fewer points than Chelsea this season. If we say that, you know, Everton picked up more and then got them taken away. That is staggering. Five teams, three of whom are the promoted teams who...
So they would be 15th without that points deduction.
Right? Well, goal difference would mean they're higher.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, it's pretty desperate.
Okay.
Chelsea have won 9 league games this year. So one more than Wout Weghorst. So they got that at least.
Will they make it 10 this weekend when they host Sheffield United? Yeah. Chris Wilder, can he make it? 3 defeats in a row for Pochettino.
He's got it in his locker.
Chris Wilder was the manager for Pochettino's final game at Spurs.
Is that right? What happened in that one?
They drew 1-1.
Okay. What do you think, Raf? Do you fancy the Blades to cause further disruption?
Every time I'm thinking Chelsea are beginning to get their act together and surely a team coached by Pochettino with so many individual players off quality cannot play as badly, then they plumb new depths. On that basis, I'd probably expect them to bounce back and show a reaction and win this game. I think Christopher Nkunku coming in will be unlike Onana a very positive, transformative.
Do you think he might feature this weekend already?
I think he's very close, very close. I think he is so good that he will make single-handedly a massive difference, even though attacking players have had a really hard time making any sort of impact at Chelsea for the last, 2 years.
2 decades.
Feels like a long, long time.
It's a long old list.
Since Didier Drogba left.
Shevchenko.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fernando Torres.
Anyway, I got a feeling that maybe the Chelsea renaissance and fight back will start this weekend.
This weekend? Against the re-energised Chris Wilder Blades. We shall see. As I mentioned, the other game featuring a bottom three side is Luton's trip to Bournemouth, who are very much in form. 5 wins in their last 7. Dominic Solanke averaging a goal every 2 games. Should be a good one, that, do you think?
I mean, we should point out that a few weeks ago, some people were saying, well, was Derby's 11-point record under threat this season? Well, by the end of this weekend, all the bottom three could have 11 points or more. So they just, no one will ever beat that Derby record. Yeah. It's unbeatable.
Mm. West Ham Wolves is the televised game. Meantime, Sunday, 2 o'clock, getting us warmed up, fluffing us up for the Liverpool Man United.
It's a good little amuse-bouche.
Go on then.
Well, I say, it's quite good. I mean, I think you made the point earlier, and I think it is actually a key thing that if a team's been on telly a lot recently, it does kind of... You want a bit of a variety, don't you?
But yeah, I mean, fresh from West Ham Palace, do we need West Ham Wolves?
I don't think we do.
Arguably not.
You know, it could turn out to be the game of the round, although West Ham will be coming off Thursday night football. They're hosting Freiburg in a showdown for top spot in their Europa League group. Oh, Raf, you and I will be enjoying that and all the rest of the Europa and Conference League games because we'll be doing a roundup late Thursday. Perhaps, listen, you're in time still to catch it. 10:30 we're on air with a whole hour and a half, which seems like a lot, but it flies by, Duncan.
I'm going to tune in.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, tune-in's a very old-fashioned description of what you're going to be doing.
I'm going to activate the Discovery Plus app on my smart TV. You have to go past the documentaries, and there's sport, and there it is.
There it is. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, yes, that's coming up. Well, that's Thursday night viewing, but this is Sunday lunchtime viewing, and I, for one, am looking forward to it. Producer Charlie stuck his head around the window again. Give us a wave, Producer Charlie. That's for you if you're watching on our YouTube channel. Charlie wants everyone to know that he's well and is being treated very fairly. Yeah. So
he wrote that in capitals, a bit weird.
What Charlie wanted to say was that he felt we hadn't given enough attention to Newcastle Fulham, which I mentioned in passing amidst our Champions League review.
We should probably celebrate Raul Jimenez's long-awaited return to Fulham.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we did on Sunday night stroke Monday morning, but yeah, it really does look like he's back. It's what, 4-3 or something crazy like that?
3-2 and in the Premier
similar
League.
Similar numbers.
Yeah, very similar.
Not necessarily in that order. But
he's looking to score in 3 consecutive league games for the first time since November 2019, the third game of which was against Eddie Howe's Bournemouth.
Oh, my goodness. Look at you. You came correct with your stats. Mm. Are Fulham going to inflict further misery on the Magpies this weekend?
Well, you'd imagine so, given how Newcastle have been defending.
And they have looked so fatigued. They definitely got it up, if you'll excuse the expression, for Wednesday's game at St. James's Park. But with that gone, the deflation could be a very flat atmosphere there.
Mm.
Or maybe not. The Geordies may be roaring their boys on.
Got it up, but just couldn't keep it up.
It's a shame, isn't it? Fulham, there you go.
Yeah, Newcastle 7 points off top 4. They need something.
Okay. Where are Fulham now?
10th.
Hmm?
Probably the most under-the-radar team in the Premier League this season, I'd say. Because they're just... You know,
where's the radar?
The radar is in the River Thames near Fulham's ground.
When you say under the radar, that suggests that they've been kind of like tunnelling under the rest and now you're going to pop up in the top 4. But they're 10th, Duncan.
Yeah, but they're playing well. They could go on a little run.
Yeah.
Get 5th.
Yeah, well, if that happens...
Back 5-0. That took them... The radar picked that up, didn't it? But I know what you mean. And even last season, they were a story for a bit. But then they were safe.
And now we're noting the fact that they're 10th.
Yeah, but they're the coming force.
Isn't it? Okay, right. Yeah.
In West London.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, actually, there's a little cluster of West London. 10th, 11th, 12th.
They're ahead of Brentford?
Yeah.
So
they are
10.
The kings of West London right
Boom.
Now.
Boom.
Maybe they should combine, have an 18-team Premier League. help the England team.
All right. Happy now, producer Charlie. There you go. So that's coming up on when, Charlie?
On Saturday at 3 p.m.
Saturday, 3 p.m. Excellent. Enjoy it if you're able to see it or get along to the game at St. James's. We, of course, will be running up the Premier League action straight after the final whistle of Liverpool-Man United on Sunday evening. That will be with you very late Sunday, probably early Monday morning. So I do hope you'll be joining us for that. For now, many, many thanks to you, Raphael Honigstein, Duncan Alexander, Charlie. Give our regards to Big Ange.
Will do.
To producer Charlie and Rachel in the booth. And to you, listener and viewer. We'll see you soon. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.